Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jamie. Guest host Arlen Byert talks to Brian Daldorf about how he got interested in poetry, doing poetry at the jail, and what he gets out of it. He will read some poems out of the latest issue of Coal City Review. Host Latara Smith talks with Saj Kaya, local activist, about a new not-for-profit she has started to work on behalf of the wrongfully convicted. She will explain her motivation, what they plan to do, and how you can help. Stay tuned for our calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Now, here is Arlen and his guest.
Thank you, Jeff, for hosting us today. We certainly appreciate your support. Brian, your accent doesn't sound Kansan or Minnesotan, so could you solve this mystery for us?
Well, that's quite right. I'm from England originally, and I came to the States to do graduate work in the 1980s, and I've been here since then.
Oh, wonderful. So you did your undergraduate work then in England?
Yes, I did.
And at what university or college?
The University of Kent in Canterbury.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So what brought you all the way to Illinois for graduate school?
Well, I wanted to go to the States to do graduate work and applied to various places, and I got the best offer from Illinois. Didn't really know what I was going to, but it's been a great experience, and I never regretted doing that. I spent the second half of my life really in the States.
Yeah, thank you. So then after graduate school in Illinois, you got your PhD there?
Yes, I did.
Yes, and then you got the job at KU?
Yes, I did.
And what was the attraction there, Brian?
Well, honestly, it was the best offer that I got, and I didn't really know anything about the school before I went there, so it was like a completely open book to me. But again, it's been a great experience, and I love the school, and I've been very happy there, and my kids have both gone there, so I couldn't ask for more, really.
Yeah. And do you teach English and poetry, or what is your teaching schedule like?
So, I mean, in my career at KU, I've taught about 10 or 12 different classes, poetry, literature, novels, writing classes, of course. So different things, like most people in the profession, we have to teach a number of different classes.
Yeah. How did you get started doing the poetry work at the Douglas County Jail? That just seems like such a different thing to be doing, to teaching college students and then teaching people at the jail. So what led you to that, and how did that get started?
Well, I think, as you say, one of the attractions of it is that it was very different from my teaching at the university. It was something that I was always interested in, and I'd had some experience of working at various detention facilities before, but two of my colleagues in the English department, they set up a program at the Douglas County Jail in Lawrence, just on the edge of Lawrence. And when they left, I took over the class and really turned it into more of a creative writing class, as you've seen when you visited the class. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I did in 2001, was my first class there. So I've been doing it since then and loving it and looking forward to it every week, as you know. You've sat in and you know it's a good experience.
Yeah, you do a wonderful job there. You really do. Could you share with us the connection between your personal writing and your work at the jail? How do they interface?
Well, I think that I just find the class inspirational. One of the things that I've found about the class is that I think that it means more to the inmates in the class than perhaps my university classes, because they're often in quite a difficult, sometimes desperate situation in their lives. And I think that produces writing of just a particular intensity. And I've just found that inspiring, because I've worked with inmates there and their writing means so much to them. And it's made me realize how important writing can be to all of the, to all of us, and that's something that I think inspires my own writing.
Well, I know from the statistics in Kansas and recidivism in Kansas, like most states, is around 50%, that once an inmate gets released, within 3 years, about half of them are back in prison. And I know it has a big impact on the inmates at Lansing. And I'm sure writing from the heart like your men do has a big impact on them too. And I was wondering, what kind of feedback do you get from the men at the jail?
Well, what I've heard from quite a number of them is that the class is something that they look forward to every week. So, you know, those of us who teach the class, I mean, we hope for higher things. We hope that some lives can be turned around and that the guys can sort of take a better track in their lives. But quite apart from that, I think the class is just a good thing at the jail, and it just helps out with the tough experience of incarceration. And that's what I've heard from many of the guys over the years that I've worked there, that the class is just something that they look forward to every week. And I think that's just a great starting point. And if it can do any more in their lives, then I consider that a bonus. So basically, I think we're just helping out with guys begin to look at their experience and try to figure it out and maybe try to take better ways with their lives.
Yeah, that's very, very important. We'd like to talk a little bit today about Coal City Review. And I was wondering, what was your inspiration for Coal City Review? Would you describe to our audience what it is and when it started?
So Coal City Review is a literary journal, and we publish mainly poetry, but also fiction and reviews and interviews, just anything really connected with the literary world, although for the most part we publish poetry, as you'll have seen. And I started this when I was still at Illinois and published the first two or three issues there. And the reason that I started it was because that lots of good work was coming into my hands as I taught classes, as I got to know other writers. And I just thought how good it would be to have some way of publishing this so that other people could see it. So that was really my idea to start with. And it's just something that I've kept up with because, I mean, I just see more and more really good material, and I wish that I could publish more, but we do the best that we can. This comes out approximately once a year, and in that year I try to collect all of the good work that comes to me and publish it in Coal City Review, which is usually about 100 pages or so of work.
Yeah, it's a beautiful journal. It really is. I know there is a town in Illinois called Coal City. Is that where you got the title?
Yes, it is. And it's just a place that I've been to one time. But when I was thinking about this idea, I just thought that's a really cool title, Coal City Review. And so I just took the name there, not because I have any connection with the place. I mean, I was at school in Illinois, but I just thought that sounded really cool. And that was the reason why I did it. So it was just a quick decision. And it's something that I've lived with now for what, 20, 30 years or something, Coal City Review.
Yeah. Well, I've been reading Coal City Review for several years and often wondered where the title came from. And then a couple of years ago, my family and I were driving to Chicago, going through St. Louis, up Interstate 57, I think. And there I see exit sign for Coal City.
Right.
I thought, did Mr. Dahldorf get...
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. That's
the title
where it came from.
For his journal from this Coal City town in Illinois. That's wonderful. Tell us about what led you to ask me about, Arlen, might we publish some of your inmate poems in Coal City? I was just stunned by it. And led you to include the inmates from Lansing Prison?
Well, you and I had sat in on each other's classes. You had come to Douglas County Jail in Lawrence, and then I had come to sit in on your class. And in fact, one of the former inmates in my class was in your class, so that there were a number of connections between us. And I loved sitting in on your class. I loved seeing the work there. And I just thought it would be a great idea to publish a section. What, there are about 30 plus poems in this section from Lansing. And I really liked the work, which we'll probably read some of these poems. And I just know how important it is for inmates to feel like they are connected with the world, because one of the hardest things to deal with in incarceration is just that feeling that you're cut off from the world. And I thought that this would be a way that they could feel good about what they were doing. The work is worthy of publication. It brings people into a world that not too many people know about. And so for a number of reasons, I thought it would be a really good idea. And I'm very pleased with how it turned out. And it is kind of the featured section of this particular Coal City, the last one that we published in this year.
Yes, I noticed, of course, the cover with the beautiful photograph from Uruguay. And then the cover says, featuring the poets of Lansing Prison.
Yes.
And I just will never forget the night after I got a copy of the book, and I took it to Lansing Prison and shared it with the inmates. And I'll never forget, I don't know if it was Mr. Bakke, I think it was Mr. Bakke, one of the inmates. And he looked at the book and he said, "You mean to tell me I'm a damn published poet?"
Right.
I said, "Yes, sir. You are."
And that's more than a lot of writers achieve. And, you know, it's great quality work and people can learn a lot from it. And, you know, I hope that people read it and see how good it is.
Yeah. And then Mr. Bakke and almost all the inmates that were there said, "Could you send a copy to my mom?
Sure.
Could you send a copy to my sister? Here's the address. Can you please?" And then I hear back from some of these family members. I mean, they're just stunned that their son, who maybe dropped out of high school, didn't go to college, never studied literature, didn't major in English, all of a sudden, maybe not all of a sudden, a published poet.
Right.
What it meant for the family.
Yes.
For the parents. Yeah, it's just quite spectacular, Brian. And I just thank you for doing that and the impact you and this book have had on the inmates and their families. It's really quite remarkable.
Well, thank you. Yes, I mean, I love doing it, and I'm glad that it means a lot to other people, because it means a lot to you and me, of course, doing this sort
yeah.
of work. And I'm just so glad that people appreciate what we're trying to do with these classes and the publications and whatever.
Yeah. We have this, as you mentioned a little while ago, this serendipitous moment with Mr. Jacob Waldrop, as he was in your group at the Douglas County Jail, and then he joins my group
right.
at the Lansing Prison. He's a wonderful person and a poet. So I was wondering if you would comment on your days at the jail with Mr. Daldorf and read one or more of his poems.
Yes, so he was one of the inmates that I met quite early in my time there. And every so often in the class, a kind of class leader emerges, a guy who kind of sets the tone of the class. And certainly that was Jay, Big Jay as we called him. And he was one of the keenest writers that we had in the class. And he made it very clear that he had taken the decision to turn his life around, try to do something better. And his writing was a very big part of that. I think it gave him a sense of pride, which, you know, he really deserved. And what I saw in him was that he was an inspiration to other guys, especially some of the younger guys there. And he was telling them that the stuff that they were doing at the time, that was not going to help them, and that there was really a better way. And he had found this way, and he could help guide them in that direction. So I think he was doing really good work with other guys around him. And you and I have known him for 10 years or more. And, you know, he has been very consistent in that. And we appreciate that. So, yes, I mean, I'm so pleased that he's done well with his work.
One of the poems that really touches me by Mr. Waldrop is his poem. It's a short poem, and I guess it's in the, is it in the Cinquain format?
Yes, the one called Lessons.
Yeah, Lessons.
It right.
Reminds me, it's a story I hear so often. So many of the inmates at Lansing Prison either have no dads or very violent dads. And that's so difficult for young men to deal with. And I was wondering, Brian, if you could read Mr. Waldrop's poem, Lessons.
Yes, certainly. Lessons. Big leather strap. Crying, begging, pleading. Hope the pain goes away quickly. Daddy.
Yeah. That is just so powerful.
Yes, it is.
How he can say so much in so few words, and truly from his heart. Another wonderful poet at Lansing Prison that I've gotten to know over the years is Mr. Wise Hayes. He went into prison as a 16-year-old with a conviction of felony murder, and has been an integral member of the poetry group. He's now released, and he's doing very well. And I was wondering if you would read a poem from Mr. Hayes.
Yes, again, I met him on quite a number of occasions. I've seen him since he's been released, and again, he's been an inspirational character to us. So this is called The Lion. There is a lion outside. I hear his roar and see his pride. No fear do I detect in him, regardless of the way he hides. The stone walls do not keep him out, nor can they contain him. Just as none could capture him, nor can I explain him. He is here in prison, a scavenger, a predator, a beast, an egomaniac, intruder, competitor. He boldly takes his prey in daylight, crushing it with his teeth. The men whimper vainly, even as he starts to feast. Shots are fired from the towers, yet he never falls. He simply roars up at the shooter, then turns and walks right through the walls. Often I have hid, hoping to avoid him, never doing what I dream, because he fills me with terror. Recently he caught me, knocked me to the ground. I felt his claws on my chest. I couldn't make a sound. His voice sounded familiar as I looked into his eyes. Why are you so afraid? He said. I am part of you. I am your future, Wise.
Yeah, that is just so powerful.
Yeah, it's even better when he reads it, but I did my best, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he reads better. He reads that one better than you do, Brian.
Yes, he does. He certainly does.
There's another wonderful poem by Mr. Avron Chapman. It's on the page 73, and it's entitled, I Am. And I find this one very powerful. I was wondering, Brian, if you would read that one.
Yes, this is called I Am by Avron Chapman. I am competent, I am diligent, but I wonder if that is the measure. I hear voices of disapproval. I see a question mark in the mirror. A chance is what I desire, but opposition is what I am getting, even though I am competent, even though I am diligent. I pretend that it doesn't hurt, that I feel a wound in my spirit. And since I cannot touch it, I worry who will heal it. I cry out to the Lord, unto the mighty Spirit, for he knows my competence, he is the reason I am diligent. I understand very little. To boast of more would be a lie. I say what is my truth, and with my truth I shall die. I dream of many things, but only one repels the eye. a world in disarray, too arrogant to cry. I try to understand, but it extends beyond the sky. I only hope that same hope that enables every life, that maybe, just maybe, everything will be all right. I am competent. I am diligent. That's I Am by Avren Chapman.
Yeah, Avren was released several months ago, and he's a good friend of YSA's, of course, and he's adjusting very well.
Good.
He's got a good job, and he's making very good progress, so that's wonderful. Another long-time person in the poetry group at Lansing is Mr. Greg Bakke, and his poem or poems are on page 69. And Brian, I was wondering if you would read either one of those, Second Thoughts or Microcosm.
Yes, this is Second Thoughts by Greg Bakke, and I know him quite well after visiting your class on a number of occasions. Second Thoughts. Through clouded eyes, only doubt can chase away the fear. An elaborate game of hide and seek, only on the surface, not too deep. In the roots where confidence grows, acceptance turns into resolve. Like the willow bending with the wind, only to bounce back again. Sow the seed, water the ground, prepare for tomorrow. Don't fear the storm, wait for the rainbow to guide your way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's powerful. Marty Robinson was in the group for a long time, and he has a very beautiful poem, powerful poem on page 88, Brian, entitled The Vase.
Yes, sure.
You might pronounce that differently.
Well, I can say vase. I can say that. The Vase. Carelessly bumped dreams shatter like a precious vase on a cold, hard floor, straining over the pieces. Who will help me repair this priceless vessel? Once filled with things hoped for, tomorrow's laughter and happy tears, now mingled with dust and dangerous shards. I look up, you've already left the room. I was pleased, Arlen, that you included your poems with the group, because I think you see yourself as being very much a part of the group, and I think the guys really appreciate that they feel like you're just one of them when you're in the classroom, and I know that they really appreciate that.
Thank you, Brian. We're getting down to the end here, but I'd like for you to read at least one more by Charles Sims on the facing page there. God, where are you? I think this reflects what I see, the loneliness, the abandonment that so many inmates feel after a long period of incarceration.
Yes, it's a tough experience, that's for sure. God, where are you?
God, where are you?
God, where are you? Since the beginning of time, you have sat and watched as your world filled up with pain. You have watched the rich pray and punish the poor. You have heard angry cries. I know you have eyes to see, yet things continue to get worse. Ever think of that old lady who gives her tithe in your name and her prayers begging for peace, as murder and hatred run wild? Your silence is so immense and loud, that's why I'm asking, where you at? This ain't making no sense. I like it. Yeah, that's how it is.
Maybe not grammar quite fitting for an English professor.
But the language is just what it needs to be.
It is what it is. Danny Pickerel is a rather new inmate, but we're running out of time. So appreciate you joining us here today, Brian. And where is the book Coal City Review? Where is it available?
So it's available on Amazon. It's available from the Coal City Review website, and it's available through me or through you and in bookstores, certainly in Lawrence.
Okay, wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Brian, for joining us today. You do special work, and it's very much appreciated.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Jaws of Justice Radio.
Now the calendar for the week of June 18th. Today, Monday, June 18, hundreds of people are traveling in justice rides to Saraland, Alabama from across the state to protest charges against Chakasia Clemens. Chakasia was charged with disorderly conduct at the Waffle House in Saraland, even though she was the one assaulted. You are invited to receive updates, photos, and videos during the justice rides by texting PROTECT to 225568. That's PROTECT to 225568. The Casey Chapter of Mothers in Charge Healing Support Group will be meeting Thursday, June 21st from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Center, Suite 124 West, 3200 Wayne Avenue, KCMO. This group is for people who have lost loved ones to murder and violence. The first hour will be sharing of experiences, and in the second hour, therapists and others who can help navigate the emotional and legal terrain will be available. For more information, you can find them on the web at www.kcmothersincharge.org or call them at 816-912-2601. The KCMO chapter of Moms Demand Action will be held Wednesday, July 11th, 6 p.m. at the Waldo Branch, KC Public Library, 201 East 75th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. You are invited to help them work for common sense gun laws at the state and national level. The Kansas City chapter of Missouri CURE will have their monthly meeting today, Monday, June 18th, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at 3811 Chestnut, KCMO. Missouri CURE works for humane treatment and rehabilitative programs for those incarcerated in our state. My name is Jamie, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. Up next is Latara and her guest.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the show this morning. I consider it a blessing to be here today. I'm Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project, and I am blessed and honored this morning to be able to interview a wonderful lady who has started a new organization here within our Metroplex of Kansas City, Missouri. And I want to welcome her this morning. She's getting in her seat and getting situated, but I think we're ready to go now. Ms. Saj Kaya, I want to thank you for coming in this morning and interviewing with me on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Latara. I absolutely love you.
Oh, thank you.
You are a godsend.
Thank you.
You know, we appreciate you in the community so much because what we need is what you give, and that is the truth, 100. And you keep it 100 all the time. I'm grateful. Girl, I'm grateful. I could go on and on about you, but we have some other people we want to address.
Amen. Thank you so much. I sure appreciate those compliments. I want to know more about your organization because, you know, I got wind that you have started a new organization. So I want to know what exactly is your organization about? What's the goal? What's the mission? What's going on?
Well, we have a family that are sitting in cages, being terrorized on a daily basis, getting not food, nourishment, assistance, help, that didn't do it.
Okay.
That didn't do it. You hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
And I can't imagine, oh my, what it must be like for a human being to be set in a cage. A cage!
Yes, ma'am. Now, your organization, real quick, let's announce the name of your organization.
Oh, yeah. Exonerate. And that word means to purge, to clear away accusations of wrongdoing.
Okay. Now, is it exonerate or does it have, is there more of a name?
Yes, it's Exonerate My people.
Okay, are you saying exonerate my people or ma people?
Ma. All have a mother.
Okay.
And it represents the strength and the power and the nurturing
okay.
of the mother of the universe.
Okay.
That
okay.
when, you know what a mother's like when somebody messes with their children.
Yes,
you hear
ma'am.
Me?
Yes,
that's ma that I'm talking about.
Okay.
That nurturing, loving spirit that sees her children in danger and is coming forth to wherever her children are
okay.
to aid and assist and do what's right by them.
Now, with Exonerate My People,
mm-hmm.
what is it that you all are going to be focusing on?
It's that we're focusing on the wrongly convicted individuals
okay.
that are imprisoned and incarcerated
okay.
in these cages that I'm talking about. Wrongly convicted individuals that by whatever means have been placed and convicted in prison, incarcerated. That's why we have this mass incarceration, because we have a system that's not broken, but is doing what it's designed to do. And we need to look at it and examine it and see what it's doing to us as a people, as humanity.
Yes.
Humanity.
Well, I totally agree with you there because, you know, as we all know, especially here in the state of Missouri, we do have a lot of issues with wrongful convictions. And we just don't have issues with wrongful convictions, but we have issues with our justice system here in the state of Missouri not addressing wrongful convictions.
Absolutely.
We have issues with our prosecutors and our attorney generals not addressing the issues of wrongful convictions.
Absolutely.
Even when there's newly discovered evidence in a case to show that a particular individual is innocent, and they ignore it.
Yes.
And not only do they ignore that, but they ignore the very laws that have been set in place for them to follow.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's a sad thing, Sash Kaya, when we have a prosecutor or an attorney general in an office that has a duty, an ethical duty as a prosecutor to acknowledge newly discovered evidence, investigate it, and make that evidence known into the court, and then they don't do that. I think that is really, really sad, and we see that quite often.
It's more than sad.
Yes.
It's abominable. These are people's lives we're talking about. Not just their lives, but their children's lives.
Yes,
their
ma'am.
Mothers and their fathers' lives. Their uncles and their aunts' lives. The people, their friends. You
yes.
see?
Yes, ma'am.
And to absolutely ignore and disregard something that has been presented to you, and it's your job.
Yes, ma'am.
It's your
yes,
job.
Ma'am. Yes,
so
ma'am. I
what's
agree.
Up with that? Well, who pays their check? Who pays these people's check?
Right.
Who? I'm asking you a question. Who pay their check?
We know who pay the checks.
Who?
Well, you know, the state, the people.
The taxpayers' money.
Of
Hello.
Course. Yes.
The heart. See, that thought in the back of our head. Oh yeah. They are working for us, aren't they? But they're putting us in jail at the same time.
Right.
You know? So, yes, we...
And then, you know, we just don't have the issue also. And I want to get more to what your organization is about and what you're going to do and, mm-hmm. and everything. But I also want to bring up the fact that not only do we have individuals who are incarcerated for crimes they didn't commit, okay?
Yes.
We have many individuals who are incarcerated here in the state of Missouri for crimes that they did commit, but they were harshly punished. And I think that is an issue, too. So tell me... what it is that your organization, what are you doing? What are you planning to do? How are you guys going to address some of these issues? And what services do you have to offer individuals, you know, that are listening, that are, you know, in prison, harshly punished or in prison for crimes that they didn't commit?
Well, as you say, we are just beginning. We
yes.
are launching as of when we get the toll-free 800 number for the wrongly convicted individuals to have the opportunity to call us.
Okay. So they're family members, because, you know, from prison, they won't be able to call a 1-800 number.
Well,
so remember
okay,
that.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
yes. Remember
yes,
that.
Yes. That's correct.
Right. But it would be a toll-free number. Their families could contact you all and reach out to
call.
You guys for help.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. No, actually, yes, that's exactly right. They would reach out to what we set up a phone bank to collect information from them.
Okay.
So that once we've collected the information from them, we can
begin to assess the issues.
Well, yeah, yes. Well, actually, we give it to our private investigative team.
Okay.
To research it and follow up on the things that need to be looked at. To
yes,
see
ma'am.
What needs to be done in each particular case.
Right, because each case will most definitely be
absolutely.
Each case will most definitely be different,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
And if you look at those cases of individuals, I can think of a gentleman right now, Joseph Williams. He, you know, was committed the act of rape, and when, you know, he did do it, there's no disputing that. But this individual received 764 years, you know. Then we have the case of Eric Breton.
But wait a minute. But when
64
you say 64
years. 764.
But I don't know the exact article, but there was a older man accused of raping some child or something, and they just, you know, slapped his wrists.
Well,
you
I mean,
know,
it happens
like
so,
that when you
and
when
this
you
is
see
why
those
we have
type
to look,
of comparisons.
Exactly. And this is why we have to start looking at these cases where these people are harshly punished. Because like I was getting ready to say, look at the case of Eric Brayton. You know, the jury, I believe, if not mistaken, recommended 7 years. And the judge overwrote that and gave him 64.
That's criminal.
I mean, so, you know, these are issues. And, you know, with you guys coming in as a new advocacy agency, being able to advocate for these people who are harshly punished and wrongly convicted, I want to applaud you for even wanting to put together this type of group to serve the community, because it is most definitely needed.
Well, you know, I don't really need any applause. It's the abundance of my heart. I can't imagine sitting in a cage. You know, years and years ago, they put our black people in cages and zoos, and white people walked around and looked at them. This was an actual thing that took place,
mm-hmm.
You know, and now we not only have a mass incarceration in every person should read the book, The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander,
okay.
And look at that movie, a 13 documentary. You know, it's on your Netflix. You need to look at those things. You need to read that information to understand the system of black codes, the system of, you know, a police state that we're living within, this enforcement, you know, this attack on people and their lives and them having no opportunity and no defense of any kind. This is appalling. And I don't do it for any glory. The glory goes to the Creator that sent me, you
okay.
know, that sent me to do this. This is all this. None of this is easy for us because it's heartbreaking. It's disturbing. And even our people don't seem to want to, you know, really get up and contribute. But they're all, and you know what I call it?
Mm-hmm.
Under a spell. You know,
well, you know, I want to say this because and I most definitely hear what
yes,
you're saying.
Ma'am.
And I, you know, I hear what you're saying. I feel what you're saying. But I want to make this point to our listeners
mm-hmm.
that wrongful convictions, OK,
yes.
happen to people of all races.
That's right.
We have individuals of all races who are harshly punished. So,
well, you know, of all cultures,
you know,
because there's only one race. And that's one of the problems. People see us as different races. We are the human race.
Okay.
We are the human race. And we are a variety of cultures, you know. And we have one culture that seems, through this white supremacy or whatever, want to battle down every other culture
mm-hmm.
and not let people live.
Okay.
But, you know, as we talked about, I'm going to go on and just say, what we do in a nutshell, because
we're getting ready to focus on the services that Exonerate My People
right,
offer.
Okay, right. Yes.
Just so the listeners know. Okay,
and it's, you know, as I said, we're building and we're growing, and there's probably going to be things that are going to be added, you know. But right now, we're really concerned about those that are wrongly convicted sitting in prison, and we are concerned about those overcharged as well. You know, a lot of this. It's mental illness that we're dealing with, and they should not be put in cages and in prison and terrorized and penalized. What they need is medical assistance. You
okay.
know, mental illness and the different things. Violence is mental illness. But our society,
our
society breeds this. You know, yes, they're chemical imbalance. That's still health issues. We're dealing with things that need to be dealt with, you know, in a whole different way than prison, caging people, you know, terrorizing people, not giving them nutrition and making them work for no money. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, let me announce to our listeners, this is Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project. And today I'm interviewing a very nice lady by the name of Saj Kaya. And she has started a new organization. And the organization is called Exonerate My People.
Justice
Initiative. And we are here just kind of touching base, finding out exactly what it is that her organization is about. And how are you guys going to be serving the community with your organization? Because so we do have a lot of offenders that are listening. Let me change that. We have a lot of offenders that are listening, and we also have a lot of individuals who are incarcerated who shouldn't be offenders
because
they are innocent, wrongly convicted.
Let
me say that. And real quick, I want to send just a really quick shout out to, we know Crossroads Correctional Facility is locked down right now. So I just want to send this word of encouragement to those men who are there in Crossroads. You know, we do have a Ricky Kidd who is innocent, wrongly convicted. You know, we have Tremaine Gwynn, we have Ariane Neal, I just want to encourage those brothers because they're on lockdown. They're on a mandated lockdown. Mm-hmm. And that is very, very stressful. I don't think people understand. They are in their cells. They cannot come out. They're getting sack meals, three times a day. They get to take a shower a couple of times a week. I mean, it's very difficult. So for my brothers that are listening, you hold on. You stay encouraged.
Yes.
We're still, you know, advocating for you.
Yes.
You know, we're praying for you. Stay encouraged and just know that you're going to be okay here shortly. Amen. Now, let's get back to your show here.
Latara, it's simple. Like I said, for right now, what it's about is we're tweeting up, getting our website ready to launch.
Yes.
You know.
Okay.
And once we have our numbers, we're going to begin a campaign to get those numbers out so that people can begin to call in.
Do you have any contact information that you can share with the people
right now? We do have an email address.
Okay.
And that is exoneratemypeople.
Okay.
at mail.com.
Mail.com.
Yes.
Okay. Now, and we want to make sure and emphasize exonerate ma.
Ma.
M-A.
Well, you know the mother that I was saying coming to help out her children. So y'all not going to forget, you know, what that's about.
But we want to make sure that people know.
Yeah, we do.
Because
we
I heard the name, I automatically thought my and thought M-Y.
And, yes, so and that's why I correct
sure
people
and
I want people to understand that energy. You see, what we're dealing with is force. But what we need to deal with is the power of love, which is stronger than any force.
Now, I know that we spoke and you're building a team of private investigators.
Anointed
private
investigators.
Okay,
we not playing. Anointed. We don't want nobody going up to somebody. Hey, what happened?
Right.
Well, you ain't got no time. Well, I don't need it. I got to go. We don't need no nonsense.
But you're also in search of of attorneys to assist you guys pro bono, correct?
Absolutely.
So if we have any attorneys that are listening that, you know, may want to offer, volunteer some pro bono hours, this organization is most definitely interested. And you can email her at the email address she had just given. And I believe Jeff is going to have, and then Jeff is going to update the website with your contact information as you get it to him.
Yes.
So, you know, if there's any attorneys out there that do want to help this organization, you know, please, please, please reach out and do so. Because we all know that once an individual is once that judge, you know, once that person is convicted, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're sentenced,
mm-hmm.
they're gone to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it's you know, you do the direct appeal, then you've got the 2915. And then after that, you know, you're coming in with the Rule 91s. Now you're doing what's called, you're fighting post-conviction relief. Post-conviction relief representation is so expensive. Mm-hmm. That's why organizations like the Innocence Project or Centurion Ministries out of Newark, New Jersey, and they take cases here in Missouri as well, even though they're out of state. Those organizations are very important to fighting and helping individuals, but they have such long wait lists because there is such a cry of people saying, I'm innocent. There are so many people. So, you know, even organizations like yours or the Casey Freedom Project, where, you know, we don't have, you know, we don't have all the big attorneys to help us with things, mm-hmm. but advocacy mm-hmm. is very important. Advocacy is very important. Bringing awareness to the situations, bringing awareness to the issues of wrongful convictions mm-hmm. are very important as well. Mm-hmm. So it is good to see more organizations coming on board. Because this has kind of been something that we have another organization as well. I can't think of the name right off the bat, but the young lady's name is Kay Johnson. Mm. And she also has now an organization that is fighting for people who are innocent, wrongly convicted. So it just blesses my heart to see people starting to recognize that this is an issue. Mm-hmm. So once again,
well, with mass incarceration, how can it not be? So I want to just, can I run down this?
Sure, go ahead.
It's that you ask about some of the things that it's a legal defense fund for wrongly convicted criminal cases of poor indigenous defendants who have no financial support, who have been incarcerated from 1 to 20 years. We have anointed a team of private investigators that will research, find witness evidence pertaining to each case, and on the phone bank to collect information and search for available records, files, and evidence, persons wrongly convicted of a crime. And then, of course, what we would call our integrity legal team to examine wrongful convictions, files, and obtain exoneration, vindication, which is the clearing of blame or suspicion, reparations, restitution, and restoration, which is to repair for injury and damage done, and work to create proposals and campaigns for grants to establish fundings, and to examine and expose and dismantle and dissolve this penalty penal industrial complex that and hold it, you know, accountable for
yes.
what it's doing
right.
to human beings, you know. So that those are some of the highlights. But of course, you know, we are going to continue to examine things that need to be examined.
Now, if you guys are going to be offering investigative services, will this be free of charge to the people? Will this be low cost? What will be, because people are going to contact me. They're going to ask me, and people are going to be having their family
well,
members
that's
email
what,
you.
That's what our funding projects and things are all about.
Okay.
We are we're not asking them to pay for that. That's why they are there, because they don't have the money to get themselves out and pay for these things.
Right.
So that's why we are a nonprofit organization, and we are going to be raising and accepting donations to aid and assist us
okay.
In this endeavor.
Okay. Because you made a good point just a second ago, and I want to come back on that. And that is this right here, is that we have a lot of men and women that are in prison
yes.
who are innocent, wrongly convicted. Mm-hmm. But because they do not have mm-hmm. newly discovered evidence, mm-hmm. then they can't get back in court. And I don't think people understand that. So an investigator, you know, is a very, very, very important part
Absolutely.
Of a criminal defense team.
Mm-hmm.
Very important.
Very.
And individuals, you know, they have to know that. Okay, they have to know that. And so to see you guys wanting to focus on, you know, getting a team of investigators and willing to assist in that particular area, that's a blessing. And that's most definitely going to open many doors for those people
yes.
who are, you know, incarcerated, you know, wrongly incarcerated. And simply because, you know, they know they're innocent.
Yes.
But
yes,
they've
yes.
got to get some of the evidence to
yes.
reflect that. And many
Absolutely.
Times, and I don't think people understand
they
this
don't.
Or realize it's many times, because even as a private investigator myself and having the Casey Freedom Project, I can only do so many pro bono cases a year.
Right.
You know, because you have to have some type of finances, revenue coming in, because
That's right.
you have to travel. I've had to travel out of state to interview witnesses. And so it can, investigations can most definitely get costly.
And a book says a workman is worthy of his hire. You know, we have to understand, we working together, everybody has human needs that have to be met. And if we were all rich, we wouldn't be having to deal with this type of situation.
Okay. Really quick, we had a caller call in. They want you to give your email address one more time.
Yes. It's exoneratemypeople@mail.com.
Okay. Exonerate my, M-A, people.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to make sure that everyone knows that. But I want to say this, is that right here, is that, you know, so to see you guys coming in, recognizing that that is a need and then trying to address that need is really, really awesome.
Well, to me, you know, I've always been an educator.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have knowledge of something, how are you going to present any type of proof of anything?
Right.
Hello? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And research is essential to having knowledge, information, and educate one to empower them.
Right. And then there's steps that you have to realize, too. There's steps. You know, if you have someone that's incarcerated and they're like, look, dude, I'm innocent. Mm-hmm. I didn't do this. Mm-hmm. If someone could locate this witness right here, they would be able to provide information, because my attorney didn't call them as a witness, you know. And I have seen often, and I want to make sure that everybody clearly hears me when I say this, I have seen defense attorneys not accept, not call witnesses that could have set their client free, that could have given some type of testimony that would have set their client free, but they don't call them.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back, you know, if the offender writes them up and turns it in to the bar, they come back and they say, that was my trial strategy, not to call that witness. And they get away with it. They get away with it. And it happens all the time. So, okay. So, you know, these are things that we have to understand.
That's why anointing is essential.
So, you know, with what your organization is doing, it's wonderful. Wonderful. And really quick, because I don't think we have too much longer to go, we want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for
having me. I wish you the best launching your organization.
Yes.
And,
thank you.
You know, it's wonderful what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
It's wonderful what you're doing. And I tell you what, I believe the men and women that are offenders.
I love you all.
Are listening.
Everyone that listening.
Most definitely. Ma
loves you.
Me.
Ma's coming for her children.
Okay. Well, thank you once again for coming in. Everyone, thank you for tuning into the show. You guys have a blessed day. And stay encouraged.
It's the 420 Drug War News. This is part three of my discussion with Mr. Michael Krawitz. He was our guest on last week's Cultural Baggage program. We just have no concept of the repercussions of believing in this system, do we?
No, and I think that's the key of this whole discussion, is that we actually put the blame where it belongs. And I think the United States right now is going through a real serious issue with overdose deaths, and it's very convenient to blame the doctors, let's blame the patients. Well, how about the policy? How about the drug policy that was supposed to prevent children from getting a hold of heroin, that kept, you know, as we're watching the legalizing countries, their first use of heroin age going up and up, our first use of heroin age going down and down, as we're watching the rest of the world implement these policies like Portugal that's taking the criminal element, at least a chunk of it, and gutting it, taking away its income, that it's allowing patients to have better access, and allowing people with a drug addiction to be treated like human beings and medical patients that they are, and actually finally starting to get at the underlying problems of addiction. No, we have to go the other way. We have to listen to people like Kevin Sabet. We have to go and jail people and double the prison rate, because we got to be tough on drugs. And then no one says, hey, maybe getting tough on drugs was a mistake. Maybe listening to Kevin Sabet and Robert DuPont was a mistake. No, let's go further down this rabbit hole, kill a bunch more people, and then blame me, a pain patient.
Well, friends, we've been speaking with Mr. Michael Krawitz. Very much involved with veterans and medical marijuana, very much involved with the UN and their concepts and precepts about the drug laws. Michael, is there a closing thought, a website you might want to share?
Sure, absolutely. This international stuff is going to be going on for a good year now from here. We're actually deep in the middle of it, and we could use help. So come and take a look. Check a look at the documentation. It's at FAAAT3AST.net, and you can put a /cannabis if you want to go right to the information about the World Health Organization, all that. We've got enough information there, and it's broken down enough that you could actually just start at the beginning in an hour or two. You get a really good understanding of what's going on at the WHO if you really want that level of understanding. And I'll tell you, this is going to have an impact on every single country that we work with, 186 countries that have signed on to these treaties. So if we can have some, you know, good results of this process, and we can use your help definitely in this process, I think it's going to help patients. It's going to help, you know, this reform. We still need to reform the treaties. We're going to have to get rid of this prohibition. You know that. I know that. We all know that. But the world leaders haven't caught on yet. So go to that.net and check us out, and really appreciate your help.
Again, that was Michael Kravitz, and I am Dean at drugtruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show, and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.